welcome to Crossroads, a podcast where culture meets theology, and we try to look at things that happen culturally through a biblical worldview. Sort of a side podcast of the larger Exposit podcast. So for those who don't know, Exposit is my Bible study podcast that I do once a week. Every Friday, we go through and exposit, break apart the word verse by verse, book by book. We are in a study of John right now. And then I decided, you know, because I didn't want that to necessarily be cultural, but I did have a feeling that I need to talk on certain cultural issues. I do think it's important for Christians to be a part of culture and to have opinions on culture. And so then I said, well, let's create something totally different that's apart from the study, that doesn't interrupt with that study. So if you just want to listen to Exposit on the channel, you can. It's there available for you, and this conversation's not going to distract from the study. And so that's what Crossroads is, and this is the fifth episode. I meant to do this Monday. The goal is to do one episode a month on the first Monday of every month, but I forgot to do this Monday, so because I forgot, the topic we were going to do will be pushed back a month, probably to a more appropriate time anyway. And that topic was going to be, should Christians celebrate holidays like Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter? Not really Thanksgiving, that's not necessarily one that are considered the pagan holidays by some people, but should Christians celebrate those, or do those have, you know, pagan roots to them? What's the truth to that? Which I think it's probably better deserved to have that in the beginning of December, because that's sort of the middle of the holiday season. And so, because I missed Monday, Tuesday we had local municipal elections around the country. And I do want to, that's what we're going to discuss today on this episode of Crossroads. And locally, for me personally, where I live, I didn't have anything to vote on. So I didn't have to go to the polls to vote. Though my state did have elections. I live in North Carolina, and one of the major elections was going to be the Charlotte mayoral election, and unfortunately, Vi Lyles was elected to continue to be the mayor of Charlotte, and I just kind of find it completely funny that on Election Day, or since Election Day on Tuesday, it's now Friday as I'm recording this, I think two people that I can remember seeing have been stabbed on public transportation, which just tells you the lack of control Mayor Lyles has of the city and what she allows to happen, and what we should expect to continue to happen in the city of Charlotte until the next election, until hopefully she gets voted out. I want to speak on that just from a local level. I need the Mecklenburg County GOP to put forward a better candidate. Not that I think the candidate that we had was bad. I don't think there are a lot of Republicans in this that were running that would have been better. I'm just going to be honest. But we needed a stronger messaging. I don't live in Mecklenburg County, but I live close enough to the area and I work in the county. But I didn't see any messaging, strong messaging from Republican Party in Mecklenburg County that was what should have happened. If you, for those who don't know, we did an episode about, you know, the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and I mentioned Irina Zarudzka. That happened in Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, under Mayor Lyles. And I think, if I remember correctly when I did that episode, that I stressed that the political agenda should be to, that should be front focus and front and center, right? Of you can't have this happen. She's the one that had it happen, and that should be the messaging. And for whatever reason, that message never became a reality. It would have been if I was like if I was the candidate, that would have been my number one message of, hey, you're not safe on public transportation. We vow to make you safe, right? And what tended to happen, it appeared, is that the same people who offered condolences to Irina then went back and voted for the same system that allowed it to happen in the first place. So that's just a little bit on North Carolina elections. Not a lot really happened that I really expected to not happen. And then we could really say that across the board with all the election results. Some of the big ones we were watching, the New Jersey, I think it was the governor race in New Jersey. I didn't really expect it to go any opposite than the way it did. New Jersey was apparently starting to become a little bit more red, at least in the presidential election. We'll talk about what I think is going on here and why the results are different. Virginia flipped the governor from Republican to Spanberg. Spanberger won, the Democrat, over Winsome Earls. And then the big one that everyone's talking about is the mayor election of New York City, where Zoran Mamdani has become the new mayor of New York City, quite tragically, in my opinion. So we'll address some of those, and then the overall, like what I personally think this means. Not that I'm the arbiter of truth in this field, but what I think it personally means. The first thing I want to address, though, is I keep hearing this sort of what I call copium from the right, and I think this came out, and I call it copium because we're trying to cope with the fact that Democrats won a lot of seats, and the copium that came in trying to give a little hope so that people don't become completely blackpilled is that, well, blue states do blue state things. And sure, that might be true, but I think that's a little bit of just copium to try to deal with the fact that we have issues. We have issues. We have a worldview issue. But I'm not going to go deep into that. If you want more information, like worldview is key type thing, Steve Dace did a wonderful episode on Wednesday that you should check that out. Like, I'll just point you directly to him on we have a worldview issue. But what I think is that's copium is because I don't think local elections are local anymore. And what I mean by that is what happens at the local level is just a microcosm of what I believe will happen at the federal level. So we're going to have a bunch of Senate races in midterms next year. And a year from now, we'll be talking about midterm election results and how that went, right? And, you know, in North Carolina, we're replacing Tom Tillis. Is it going to be Roy Cooper or Whatley? I can't think of his first name off the top of my head. Again, he's not even messaging very loudly right now on the public safety things that in North Carolina that Roy Cooper, the former governor, allowed to happen, right? I would be pressing this message loud and clear for the next year if I was the GOP in North Carolina, but the GOP in North Carolina is very awful to begin with, so I don't expect much out of it. But we're replacing Tom Tillis. Are we going to lose a seat to Roy Cooper? I mean, to be honest, my early year out prediction, I do think Roy Cooper wins that election. I do. Sadly. You know, we got McConnell's retiring, so are we going to lose a seat in Kentucky? Both Senate seats in Kentucky are up for grabs. Does Rand Paul get kicked out? I don't think so. Rand Paul is very good at winning elections in his area. So, I think Thomas Massey's also up for re-election in Kentucky for the House. So there's that there. Pelosi just retired, so I don't expect to win that county or that area in that seat, but I think we should still press hard for it. There's a lot of midterms that are coming, and what tends to happen, especially in the what I'm going to call the Trump era, the MAGA era of elections from 2015 forward, the last decade, what we've seen is when Trump is on the ballot, 2016, 2020, 2024, we have strong turnout. Whether or not you believe 2020 was stolen or there was some type of fraud or fraud was more extreme than it typically is, that's up to you. From outside of the presidential election, though, the governor races in those years, the lieutenant governor races those years were very red wavy, right? In that when MAGA is on the ballot, when Trump is on the ballot, Republicans come out and they tend to vote down ballot. And Republicans can win, right? But in the what we've noticed is in the midterms, right? So Trump wins 2016, 2018, Democrats completely demolish Republicans because Republicans didn't get out the vote because Trump wasn't on the ballot. And the candidates just don't have that charisma to draw people to the polls. 2020 comes out, large Republican turnout, right? 2022 comes out, what was supposed to be this massive red wave really only happened in Iowa and Florida, and Democrats, I wouldn't say demolished, but what was supposed to be like a red tsunami was really only like, hey, Florida did really well and Iowa did really well, but that was about it. And so Democrats performed very well in 22, right? And now my fear is what we're seeing in those elections will continue to happen, and we have in 25 in these municipal elections big Democrat support and turnout, not so much for the GOP. And I think that is going to turn out the same way in 26. Just me personally, my prediction, that I think we lose the Ohio governorship. Vivekas is not a strong enough candidate, I think, for Ohio to care about. I think that governor becomes Democrat. I think we lose some Senate seats. I personally do. Like, I'm preparing for, like, the worst when it comes to these outcomes. Because the momentum is leading from this election, what I can see with the momentum is that's how it's leading. So for me, I think it would be a little bit absurd to just push this down to, well, blue states do what blue states do. Because there are a lot of things that happen. Virginia, I get it. Northern Virginia's blue. Norfolk's blue. But a majority of Virginia, if you look at a map, is red. Right? The rural areas. But they don't come out to vote if Trump's not on the ballot, right? If MAGA isn't on the ballot. And so we really need a way to get these people to the ballot box in 26. And then we also need a way, because my fear is that momentum continues in the 28, where let's assume the candidate's J.D. Vance. I think you could parade Vance as the successor to Trump, and it will be fine. He's the MAGA candidate. My fear is if Vance doesn't draw that same MAGA crowd, right? And if he doesn't pull the same, if he doesn't pull moderate leftists that don't really like the insanity of the left on a federal level, right? Some of the candidates that could be run, like a Newsom or AOC, if right, I think they're going to put out a candidate that is very beatable, or that J.D. Vance is very, I think J.D. Vance is very, I think any candidate on the Republicans that's not Trump is very beatable, because we've made the MAGA monolith solely monolithic in that Trump is MAGA, right? Rather than building the next generation of candidates that, where we don't need Trump, where we could just send Trump into retirement, right? And so we've built this party, this monolith, where everything revolves around MAGA and Trump. And I don't see that tuning out very well. Just me personally, right? And so I personally, I'm not fearful. I'm not worried. I'm not black-pilled. I feel what I just said is realistic. But ultimately, I believe we get the leaders we deserve, that God raises up leaders. I mean, that's my biblical worldview, that whoever is the leader, God intended for them to be the leader. And sometimes he gives us bad leaders as judgment. And so that's that. One other local election doesn't have anything to really do with me, but it one that I am a little bit disappointed in. Not disappointed in that it didn't go the way I expected it, because it went exactly the way I expected it. But I'm disappointed that people would be willing to vote for something like this. It is Prop 50 in California. And for those who aren't in California, who don't know about Prop 50, Prop 50 basically gave the Democrats the control to redistrict the map specifically to create more Democrat districts. And so I have a problem with gerrymandering when the right does it, when the left does it. I don't understand why we have to keep changing districts. And I understand it's about power and all that, but I think for a people to vote specifically to silence the other party, I have an issue with that. I have an issue with, you know, people in Virginia voting as their lieutenant governor, I think, or attorney general. I think it's attorney general is Jay Jones. Yeah, Jay Jones, the attorney general. I have an issue when the people of Virginia see very clearly that this man wants to, you know, and parades the assassination of 50% of the country, plus maybe more, who hold some conservative values, and he sort of parades their assassination. I kind of have an issue with that, and I kind of question what the worldview is. And there's a statement in Steve Dace's book, Nefarious Plot, where he basically says that, like, the devil loves useless idiots. And a lot of the people who vote in this country are exactly that. They're useful idiots. And none more clearly, and this is where I want to focus, is in the election of Zohran Mamdani. So I'm not one of those on the right who are scared of Mamdani because of his leftist democratic socialist policies. I'm scared of democratic socialism. I think it's stupid and dangerous, but that's not why I'm scared of this guy. Because I don't think he's going to govern as a democratic socialist. I think that's how he got into power, because he understands that the useless idiots in New York want free things. It's, you know, that you're going to be a slave to your desires, and that slavery is going to come in the hands of Sharia law. I'm more afraid that when he gets into power officially, that at some point over the next 4 years, probably the biggest city on the east coast of the country, one of the most important cities in the country, will be governed by Sharia law. That is my biggest fear. that we will have an entire city population center run and governed by a political ideology that takes and doesn't give. I think historically, over the last few decades, if you just look at what is going on in Europe, and you're not blind to what's going on in Europe, historically, this doesn't work in our favor. What we see happened in Asia, and what we've seen happen essentially since the creation of the religion of Islam, I think it was Pastor John Howerton that I heard that said it. Josh Howerton. I listen to his podcast all the time. He doesn't have the same sort of reformed. He's kind of reformed, but he leans more charismatic, which is fine. There are things theologically we disagree on, but he's one of the very few pastors that I've seen with a platform as big as his that is willing and able to be brave enough to call out, you know, it would be very easy for him to just sit in his mega church with multiple campuses and just pretend like nothing's happening and be fine, right? But he has spoken up, and on his podcast, one of the biggest in the Christian sector, Live Free with Josh Howerton. I mean, he goes over this all the time. He just did an episode on Islam. It's kind of what inspired this. But he made a mention of, I think it was him that said the following, that progressivism is a religion disguised as a political ideology, and Islam is a political ideology disguised as a religion. And truly, that is true. Islam is really not really a religion in and of itself, in that it is, without a doubt, a political ideology of conquer by force. It doesn't give back. It's theocratic. We have so much, and this conversation has to lead to Christian nationalism. And so we will discuss that, but my fear with Mamdani isn't that he's going to do free grocery stores, because I think he even recognizes that's not possible to do. I don't think he's going to do democratic socialism. I think he campaigned on democratic socialism because, just like with Bernie, democratic socialism is popular. My bigger fear is that now that he's in power, he has the ability now to turn New York City into Dearborn, Michigan, where they're waking up at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. in the morning, and with the call of prayer over the entire city. And it's essentially, Dearborn, Michigan is essentially the Middle East in the United States. And so I think Christians need to wake up to the actual fact that Islam is not going to sit around and play victim anymore. They're going to try to take over and make America an Islamic state. And I think we have to recognize what that means. That means death to the infidel, those who don't believe in that system. And so mainly what I want to talk about with this is, we have so many people in the Christian American world that are so anti-Christian nationalism because they don't understand Christian nationalism. And so I want to define the term as I'm using it, tell you what it is, what I am using Christian nationalism is, and what it is not. And why I think the Christian version of nationalism is better than any of the alternatives. And so what is Christian nationalism? So Christian nationalism is the best way that I like to explain this. It's very simple. I'm a Christian. I love my nation, right? So Augustine had what we called the Order of Loves, and essentially what that is his a systematic way to explain, you know, as a human being, I have certain a hierarchy of loves, of responsibilities, essentially, right? So God's at the top, right? I love God the most, right? So my Christianity is at the top, right? Second would be your spouse if you're married, right? So you love your God first, you love your spouse second. Your kids will be third, the rest of your extended family will be fourth. Then it becomes your community, you know, your neighborhood, then your city, then your county, then your state, then your country, right? And that's your order of loves of response. Meaning, if I had the choice to save my kids, let's say I had kids, right, I can choose one or the other, my kids or someone else's kids. As a responsibility, it would be my kids come first. Right, not because I hate the other kids, but because I love my kids more, right? And it's okay to have that way. Now, that says at the individual level, we also have the order of loves within. You know, we could continue it where we go down the country, then you know, and then you have other nations, right? So you're supposed to love your country more than you love other people, other countries, right? And you should want. Your country you live in to thrive more than any other country. Now, that doesn't mean you hate other countries, and it doesn't mean you actively plot them not thriving. But what it does mean is that I'm an American, I'm a Christian, right? And those are my identity. So therefore, I should want my nation, I should want America to thrive, right? Over, and if that means that if America thrives comes at the cost of not taking in other immigrants for safety reasons, right, or safety kids, or extreme vetting of immigration, and that's how my country thrives, because we are strongly vetting the people who come in, then that is what we should do. Right. And so Christian nationalism, what it is not, is coercion. It's not you must live by the ceremonial laws of the Bible. Right. Because so many people say, well, Christian nationalists, you're Christian nationalist. That means, you know, you want to force everyone to be Christian. And if not, they're going to be arrested. And that's not what I believe in. Because we believe in the separation of church and state. And so one of the biggest proponents and someone that I admire in this area is Doug Wilson. I know that's dangerous to say because a lot of people find Doug Wilson to be controversial. I don't see it the same way. We disagree on some things theologically. He's post-millennial. I'm amillennial. I'm sure he believes in infant baptism, I believe, because he is Presbyterian, and I don't, right? So there are theological differences. I don't agree with Doug Wilson on everything, but I think on this, it's a little complicated, but I, for the most part, I agree with what he says and what he views. And so the idea, we don't want a theocracy, because that's what Iran is. Where you are either Islam or you die, right? But we want a theonomy. But here's the thing. Every government is already theonomic. Every government is a theonomy. So theonomy, theo being God, nomos meaning law. And so a theonomy is a government in which is run by God's law. So the question then is, who is Theo and who's Nomos, right? What Theo and what law, right? So do you want a Muslim nationalism I don't think that's beneficial, right? And in fact, we actually seen that Islam destroys, it doesn't build. Would you like a secular theonomy where government itself is God? Well, that doesn't lead to anything. That's how you lead to oligarchy and tyranny and socialism. That's the secular worldview, right? Where there is no God, so government itself becomes God. And if government becomes God and rights come from God, then government is God, then that means government can strip you of your right. Right? That's the socialistic Marxist idea. And so secular nationalism doesn't work, which is why I believe like a Christless conservatism is not going to be very powerful. That's why I believe, until we have a Christian conservatism where the worldview is Christian, I don't think we're going to be very powerful against the secularist on the left who are powered by the prince of the earth, Satan, right? If we don't have a Christless, or if we have a Christless conservatism that is powering against that, we're going to lose every time. And their message is more, it hits the feelings better. It's more tolerant to them. It's not really tolerant, but it's more tolerant to them and their understanding of tolerance. Tolerance is actually, in my opinion, a demonic idea. We're not called to tolerate people's sins. We're called to expose them. So for me, if America became a Christian nation, and we did Christian nationalism in America, all that means is we have a world, or excuse me, a country, and if Doug Wilson gets his way, and I'm right there with him, eventually a Christian nation will lead to a Christian world. That's his post mill coming out. That's my optimistic mill coming out. I don't think it's going to happen, but I digress there. But if this country were to become, under Christian nationalism, and we practice that here, what would that look like, right? Well, it's a country who is governed by the standards of righteousness, justice, and mercy given to us in the Ten Commandments. It's not the ceremonial law. Like, we're not going to be like, oh, ban shellfish, no more clam chowder. And that's not what we're going to, because that ceremonial law is finished. It's been fulfilled in Christ, right? The only thing that we would govern by is the moral law, which is thou shalt not kill. Don't have any gods above Yahweh, right? But because we believe in separation of church and state, it's a fundamentally Christian nationalist idea, by the way, that those that are, for example, in the 13 colonies, when we became a country after the revolution, I believe 11 of the 13 colonies required you to be a Protestant Christian to hold office. But at the same time, if you were a minister, you couldn't hold office. If you were a pastor, you couldn't hold office, because they valued that. Okay, the people who govern should be Christian, but those who are involved in the government of God, which is in the church, those who were elders or pastors should not be in the government of man either, because there is a different calling that God holds pastors to. Then I kind of wish we go back to that, right? That you can't hold office unless you were a Protestant Christian. But if you're a pastor, you can't hold office, right? Because there's a conflict of interest there. And categorically, individuals and government are two different things. And so as far as it comes to this election, I think the most scary one is we have allowed in, through the useless idiots who that Satan loves to use on the left. The most blatant of this is I saw the video that they were interviewing people, and she was like, yeah, I voted for Mamdani. And they were like, why? And she was like, well, I really don't know. It's essentially what she said. And she had zero reason why she voted for him. She just voted for him. She didn't know any of his policies. Again, it's, you know, and it's so easy to be like, well, it's we got to stop. Because, again, the copium is, well, the women came out and voted, and they voted mostly. And there's an issue there. I think we have to address that issue. Because the issue is, how do we get young women to come vote Republican? And the issue is, I don't think they will. I don't think we forsake it, but I don't think we should try to expend a lot of energy on getting them to vote against what they want, right? Because what we're noticing, and this is why I think trends matter, what we notice is that younger males, they're becoming religious. Younger females are not. In fact, younger females are, the 18 to 23 year old females are the least religious generation of females the country has ever seen. And I think that there's a correlation in how they vote in that. And I don't know if it's worth the energy to cast pearls before swine when we are not going to give them what they want. They want free access to abortion and all of that stuff, right? And so let's use abortion as an issue. This is an issue me and Doug kind of differ on. He's an incrementalist. I'm more of an abolitionist, like get rid of it now, punish those who seek it out. But he did make a point. I listened to a podcast he did this week, and he did make a point that kind of stuck with me, where we don't want to be arbiters of conscience, right? Like, it's really, it kind of is going to be difficult, you know, to figure out why a woman seeked, and I don't know if I hold to it all the way, but it did stick with me, something that I'd have to think through. I'll just be honest with you, because I am very hardcore, like, abolish everything, punish not just the doctor, but everyone who, you know, hired the hitman, right, type thing. And so that'll give me something to think about in the research, though, on this issue. But yeah, I don't really know if I have much more to say. As far as these elections go, I'm not going to say I'm scared of the results. Like I said this to my friend. I said, if I didn't have Christ, I'd be completely blackpilled. But I understand that Christ is in control. I still think 100% that these results could be the judgment of God on us. Because God does allow invading forces, you know, to invade, and as a judgment. And so maybe that's what this is. I don't, you know, I just like to follow the patterns we see in Scripture. It could be, you know, hey, national repentance is the only way out of this. I've been saying that for 2 years now. National repentance is the only way out of this. And I'm a little bit, I think I'll end it with this. I'm a little bit frustrated from a strategy perspective, because we were, as bad as this is going to sound, we were sort of gifted a calling card of the left is dangerous, and I don't think we utilized it that much because we have a bunch of infighting on the right where we're fighting about, like, you know, we're fighting Fuentes and we're fighting Candace, who are distractions to me. I think they're paid ops 100%. And they're trying to blame the Jews on everything, right? Because that's what's popular. That's what, you know, the popular thing in the conservative movement is blame the Jews for everything. And if you look into the history of where that came from and what possibly could be the cause around them, you know, her, Tucker, Fuentes, I think if you follow the money, it all is going to lead to one of two places, Qatar or Saudi. That's just my opinion. I'm not going to do the research. Someone can if they want. I don't have the time nor energy to dig that deep. But I think that they are paid ops. The money might go back to Qatar or Qatar, however you want to pronounce it. And, I mean, their interest is definitely not to protect Israel. So I think we completely miss the actual enemy we have, which I think is Islam. And so I'm not giving a pass to Israel as a nation state at all. I mean, they're as secular as they come. They're going to be under the judgment of God just like everyone else. But I think it's easy to blame everything on the Jews and just let the actual enemy that we have, which is Islam and the takeover into the Islamic State that Islam is trying to do, that is their jihad. And so I think as Christians, we need to be awakened to that. I'll say on an individual level, we need to love Muslims. This is not a call to arms against them. Absolutely not. This is a be wise, love them with the same love Christ would show them. Minister to them. Give the gospel to them. That's ultimately our job. But it also is like, understand, you know, persecution might be coming at an accelerated rate if Islam takes over in this country. And so it's more of a, hey, this is what could happen, right? You see what's happening in Britain, UK, you know, people are being molested, like little girls are being molested and no punishment being handed out. It's just, you know, if you think it's bad now, I mean, imagine if they get America as a Islamic nation. That's scary to think about. I just a little bit frustrated as well because it took a generation, right? It took 25 years, 24 years, about a generation for the slogan to go from never forget to we forgot. It's kind of frustrating, to be honest. But let me know what you all think. I don't think I did a decent enough, I don't know, I was just sort of ranting on this one, sort of just venting some frustrations of this election. I think this momentum continues. I really do. And it's not to black pill you all. I just want to keep everyone sort of realistic. I think there's a bunch of copium on the right now that, oh, blue states just did blue states. And I don't think that's what it is. I think this is a smaller microcosm of what will come in 26. And then ultimately what I think might come in 28. I'm not 100% sold on predicting 28 yet until I see what happens in 26. But I mean, the right has a year like to put forth the best candidates, the best strategy, the best plan. And unfortunately they took out the best one at planning. I think that our side had, as far as like grassroots reaching the youth, they took him out. And so we got to fill in the gap, and we're filling in the gap with obvious grifters, like Fuentes, like Candace, like Tucker, and then this new guy that kind of stepped in, Hollyhand or whatever. Can we stop platforming this dude? I've seen some of his videos. I've seen some of his like live events on socials floating around. He's charismatic, but he's obviously a grifter, and he obviously comes from money, and he obviously doesn't care. He's just looking to build a platform for himself. This is just what I see from it. Can we stop platforming this dude? And he's not as good as Charlie was. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, he's the next Charlie. Well, he's not good at the bait and like Charlie was. Like, he's just, he doesn't have the talking points and the ability to explain the talking points. And then ultimately, if the conversation isn't, you know, Christ-centered like Charlie was turning it, then the politics mean nothing. With that, one last thing is something that I read before I started recording this was, you know, TPUSA is doing a halftime show for the Super Bowl, and I'm all excited for it. Definitely will. My intention is to tune into it. My fear is, and what will drastically change that idea of me tuning into this, is so it appears, you know, Forrest Frank and Corey Ashbury, who, you know, I'm not the biggest fans of their music, but I like their stand. They're very vocal, and I like Forrest Frank. He's very vocal on his faith. I would need to get to know them more theologically before I could say they have bad theology. Like, their music isn't bad. I think a lot of people give Corey Ashbury so much flack because Reckless Love, you know, a lot of people in my circle, the Reform circle, like, oh, God's love is not reckless. And I'm like, you're right. It's not reckless. He's very orderly. But you got to understand poetry and how lyrics are written. And the idea is that from a human perspective, God loving us can seem very reckless from a lyrical, poetic expression. In the same way that we call the gospel scandalous. God's not a God of scandal, but it's scandalous to a human perspective because we're the villain, he's the good guy. In most stories, good overcomes evil and doesn't save evil, right? But instead, God came down and took the punishment, right? It's scandalous from a human perspective, from a poetic expression, right? In the same way that it's reckless love from a poetic expression. So, but anyway, so they're not going to be participating in this halftime show because it appears like they're going to make it more patriotic GOP rally. You know, which, hey, if that's the direction they want to go, I'm fine with it. It is going to be in the middle of campaign season. And so my fear is, and what's really going to turn me away from this, is if they just turn the halftime show into, let's just get all the big political pundits on stage and make this a political rally. Because that's not what I want to watch at all. The reason I was happy with this, with Forrest Frank potentially leading it, was we could have another Jesus moment. Like we had at, Charlie's memorial was like 3 hours of worship, bro. And was fantastic. And if we're going to bring out guys like John Rich and Kid Rock and you know, stuff like that, that are the more politically charged, you know, artists that may not necessarily, you know, make it a Jesus moment, make it more about being patriotic. I'm not 100% against it. I'm just saying it would be much better if we had, you know, if we had Bad Bunny on the actual halftime show preaching degeneracy and all of that, and then you tune over to TPUSA and you had worship of the King of Kings as the halftime show. I think that would have been a bigger cultural moment than Kid Rock performing songs that no one cares about. That's just me. I'll see what it will turn into. Hopefully we get a list of artists eventually to see what's going to happen. But apparently Forrest Frank and Corey Ashbury don't want anything to do with it. I don't blame them. They're not political names. They are Christians in the Christian music industry. I'm sure there's going to be some who are like, oh, well, they're just not patriotic. And like, no, they don't want to do a GOP rally that's not Christian. They want to do a Christian halftime show. And that's what I want as well, to be honest with you. So anyway, with that, this has been another episode of Crossroads. Thank you all for listening. Just stay vigilant and stay wise as serpents. And, you know, just, you know, as we proceed as a country in the future, just, you know, be open to some of these things. I think a lot of people, and I've been told that, you know, the Muslim takeover potentiality is an overreaction, and I think it's a reality. So just keep your eyes open, you know, prepare for the worst. I always say if you prepare for the worst, you can't be surprised. I think persecution's coming, and I think we need to prepare and pray for that endurance. So with that, you know, just have a great rest of your week, and on the next episode of Crossroads, we'll probably discuss that holiday topic. And so until then, you have a great month of November. Looking at the calendar, the first Monday of December is December 1st. So December 1st quite possibly will be, So December 1st will be when the next Crossroads comes out. It's literally the week, the day after, like, Thanksgiving weekend. So, we'll probably record that Saturday, the 29th, and then I'll put it out December 1st. That's probably what the plan will be. But until then, thank you all for listening. And until the next episode of Crossroads, I will see y'all later. Please be sure to continue in and check into Exposit. That's our weekly episodic thing we do on the channel. And so if you want to, you know, participate in that and just listen to that, that'd be wonderful as well. Like, share, subscribe, and until the next one, y'all have a great rest of your week.